And we're holding on page 100 in Sukkah, in the middle of Os Tes Zayin, which is the Mishnah. We were in the middle of learning about the details about the Nisuch HaMayim. The last thing we said was that, so we said he would take a pitcher that held 3 lug of water, fill it up, they would fill it up with water from the Shiloyach spring in Yerushalayim, and he would come and pour it on the Mizbeach each of the 7 days of Sukkot. So now the Mishnah continues. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, beloig hoy menasech kol shmoina. Rabbi Yehuda says that he would be pouring with a 1 lug pitcher rather than 3, and for all 8 days, meaning Shmini Atzeres as well. Unlike the Tanakama, who said it was 3 lugim for each of 7 days, Rabbi Yehuda is saying it was 1 lug for each of 8 days. And the Mishnah continues, the one who was pouring the water, the Kohen who was pouring the water, they would tell him, lift up your hand so that everybody can see that you're pouring it into the bowls on top of the Mizbeach that we learned about last time that you're supposed to. And the reason they had to do that, because one time a Kohen poured it on his feet because he was a tzeduki and he didn't believe in the concept of Nisuch HaMayim, and everybody pelted him with their asroy. Now the Mishnah and the Gemara over here are not identifying who it was. Josephus in his histories says a story involving Yanai Melech that he did that he poured the water on his feet and everybody pelted him with their asroygim, and he goes on to say that Yanai called out his goyish soldiers and they killed several thousand Jews. Now, Mephoshim over here actually bring from Yerushalmi that says the other way around. They pelted him with a sroigim and with rocks, and they killed him. So either these are two different incidents, or as we have sometimes in other examples as well, where Josephus is operating off incorrect information. He wasn't living at the time. He was born over 100 years later. So he might be operating off information, off propaganda that the tzedukim of that time came up with, when really it was the other way around. They believed in Torah Shabbat, after all. So yeah, they included Kohenim. The later Hashmonai kings themselves became tzedukim, starting with Yochanan Kohen Gadol became a tzeduki after 80 years as Kohen Gadol, right? And even after that, yeah, you still had for as long as the second Beis Hamikdash existed, for the rest of the time the second Beis Hamikdash existed, yes, there were Kohenim who were serving in there with tzedukim. I'm sure the Chachamim would have liked to prevent it if they could, but they weren't always able to. Josephus Bechlal mentions in his histories, Bechlal, the later Kohenim Gdolim of the second Beis Hamikdash, in particular the Hashmonai kings, even though they all had the official title of Kohen Gadol, in practice they didn't discharge the usual functions of a Kohen Gadol. In particular, they didn't do the Avodah on Yom Kippur. They wouldn't have survived the Kodesh HaKadoshim if they had. Rather, their title of Kohen Gadol was more like a political title, but their particular time when they would go and do the avodah, when they would wear the 8 bigdei kahuna and do the avodah in full view of everybody, would be doing sukkos. But pashtus pashut, because sukkos is a time when it's one of the sholosh regalim. You have many people there, so then like they can show off their position. So here he says that he took this opportunity to show that he doesn't believe in the mitzvah. So first of all, the Gemara in Yoma points out, we learn from this that it mentions that they pelted him with a sroigim. We learn from this that the Nisuch HaMayim is done only in the morning, only because only during the morning do people have their sroigim. Otherwise, there's no reason for the Mishnah to have to bother mentioning what they pelted him with. In fact, the Gemara goes on to say they pelted him with rocks as well, to the point where the Gemara brings that the Mizbeach was actually down, corner of the Mizbeach was damaged. It wouldn't have been if they had just thrown a sroigim. So yeah, there's a sicha where the Rebbe talks about the deeper idea behind it. Namely, that the tzedukim took the view that, so like this, we have this nisuch hayayin throughout the year, where wine, which has a color and a flavor, represents the chochma of Torah, which we can appreciate with our brains. And then on the other hand, water represents the avodah of Kabbalah. So it doesn't taste, it doesn't have a taste, it doesn't have a smell, it doesn't have anything, but we do it. But water is essential for life, and the same way Kabbalah's oil is essential to us being Jews. So the tzedukim took the view, we don't need Kabbalah's oil. All we need is the nisuch hayayin, all we need is the chochma of Torah as we understand it. So therefore, he says, so this tzeduki is saying, what kind of people need the avodah of Kabbalah's oil? The feet, the poshut people who don't have the head to learn Torah, fine, they can have the avodah of Kabbalah's oil. But us intelligent people, we don't need it. So they all pelted him with a esrogim to respond back to him, just the opposite. The esrog, we know, represents the yid who has everything. He has Torah and he has mitzvahs. And they're saying, even the esrogim argue against you and say, no such thing. The Esrogim also know that we have to have the Avodah of Nisuch. The Esrog Jews know we have to have the Avodah of Nisuch HaMayim, the Avodah of Kabbalah. So, yeah. Okay. So here he puts in a piece from the Gemara Tainis. What? Free membership or what? I mean, in general, we find that Tzedukim were more like the upper class, like the richer people. Yeah, so, right. Yeah, we were talking about the other day, actually, that Josephus mentions in his histories, and Lahavdo, we see it from the Gemara that we learned last time as well, that that the Amei Aretz, now we know they didn't always get along with the Chachamim, but nevertheless, they supported the Chachamim in the sense they knew that the Chachamim's way of Yiddishkeit is the only true one, so fine, they themselves may not be careful with one or another mitzvah, with one or another individual mitzvah, but nevertheless, they know that what the Tzedukim are trying to do with Yiddishkeit, they want no part of. Alderach, like you have nowadays, also you have, for example, and you have the famous expression that a person says that the shul that I don't go to is an Orthodox shul. So like the guy understands reform is mechutz l'machne, but he's not up to actually keeping mitzvahs. But yeah, anyway. So here the Mechaber of Ein Yaakov put in a piece from Gemara Tainis. Where do we get the concept of Nisach HaMayim from? So earlier in our Masechta, actually, it says it's a halacha l'moshim. Earlier in our Perek, it says it's a halacha l'moshim Sinai. And the definition of a halacha l'moshim Sinai is there's no remez for it at all in the pasuk. However, then the Gemara brings in Masechta Tainis an opinion that says that there is. Toni Rav Yehuda ben Beseira, Nema Basheni ben Iskehem. On the second day, Sukkos by Korbanos, it says that you have to bring the Korbanos with Veniskehem. Unlike all the other days, it says Veniska. So you have an extra mem. Bashishi un Socheha. On the sixth day, you have the word on Socheha with an extra yud. Bashvi Kemishpotam. All the other days, it says Kamishpot. And the seventh day, it says Kemishpotam. Mem yud mem. So you have an extra mem, a yud, and a mem. Hare kan mayim. There you have. Spells out the word mayim. Mikan remez. The nusach hamayim in a Torah. So here you have a remez from the Torah shebichsav for nusach hamayim. So obviously the tzedukim are not going to accept that, but that's neither here nor there. The point is the Gemara is discussing in Masechta Tainis the opinions: is nusach hamayim in fact the halacha l'moshim Sinai, or is there a remez for it in the pasuk, which has certain implications in halacha as the Gemara discusses over there. Further on, so now the Mishnah had mentioned that they pour the wine and the water on the Mizbeach, and it goes down through the drains over there. As we learned last time, Rashi learns that it drained from the basins onto the roof of the Mizbeach, and then from there into the Shisin. Tosfos holds that it actually went directly from the bowls into the Shisin. Anyway, so let's talk about the Shisin a little bit. Omer Rabbi Baba Chana, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Shisin Misheshis Yimei Bereshis Nivru. These Shisin, these underground channels that went underneath the Beis Mikdash, underneath the Mizbeach, into which the wine and the water went, those were actually created at Sheshes Yimei Bereshis. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, describing the Jewish people in Shir HaShirim, Chamuke Yirechayich, the secret parts of your thighs, Kamoi Chaloyim, are like jewels, Maisi Yedei Amon, that are made by a craftsman. So let's explain what this means, phrase by phrase. The secret parts of your thighs refers to the shisin. Rashi explains the word chamuke means hidden and concealed, so this refers to the shisin, which are underground. And yerechayich because they're by the side, by yerech hamizbeach, by the side of the mizbeach. In fact, by the way, the Gemara mentions in Zvachim that originally in the first Beis Mikdash, the shisin were actually outside the footprint of the Mizbeach. When you poured the wine or the water on the Mizbeach, afterwards it would flow down the side of the Mizbeach and flow down into the Shisin. In the second Beis Hamikdash, the Nevi'im taught them that's not how it should be. In the second Beis Hamikdash, Hashem wants the Mizbeach to be larger, and it should actually include the area of the Shisin, and therefore there will be a hollow space over there. There'll be a hollow channel within the Mizbeach that will descend down to the Shisin, and the wine and the water will go directly into it. And they showed them how you douchen it from soaking. So, but in any case, these shisin are by the side, by the yerech hamizbeach, and therefore they can be described as chamuke yerechayich, the hidden things that are by the side of the mizbeach. And the pasuk had said kamoi chaloim, they're like chaloim, which the simple meaning of chaloim, Mefoshim explained on the pasuk, means like jewels, like settings of jewels. But here the Gemara is darshining chaloim means shem chololin v'yodin aratahoim. They're hollowed out. In other words, chaloyim is like the word cholo. They're hollowed out and they go all the way down to the underground depths. Later on in the next Perek, the Gemara tells us about that they go, actually, the Gemara is going to mention it over here briefly as well, that they go down thousands of amos, all the way down to the underground, all the way down to the underground waters. And then when it continues, Maisi Yedei Amon, these are the makings of the hands of the craftsmen. That means the ultimate craftsman, Hashem, Maisi Yedei Umenuse Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These were made by the craftsmanship of Hashem himself. So therefore we see, so the Pasuk is hinting at the Shisin and saying that they were created by Hashem himself at the time when he created the world. Rashi over here also refers to Rashi.
All this was created before the world was created.
So they were saying before the world was created, Hashem already created the Shisin, which are going to be needed on the spot of the Mizbeach for the Nesachim to go down underground. Marsha brings over here also from Rashi on Shir Hashirim, who explains that also the word Chaloyim can also mean the comparison to Yerach is not just like the Gemara is saying, not just like Rashi is saying over here, because it's next to the Mizbeach, but also because the Yerach is round, and the same way these holes are round in cross section and they go all the way down. And Chaloyim, he says, is Meloshin Chafira, is a Loshin of digging. What?
Still there today.
So Pashtus, it's still there today. So. They've done surveys. The British archaeologists did a survey on the Har HaBayis in the 1860s. They found various underground tunnels and channels and whatever going this way and that. One of those might be the Shisin. We don't know. Tonet Veda Bishmal, here's another thing. Bereshis, the very first word of the Torah. Bereshis, Altikur Bereshis, Ela Boros Shis, that Hashem created the Shis. Now, we're all familiar from the Bar Mitzvah Maimon with a different meaning of Boros Shis, that it means that Hashem created the six Midas, but here the Gemara is taking it in the sense of Shis, as in the Shisin, these hollows that go all the way down underground, and the water and the wine go down into them. So they're all created right at the beginning from Sheshes and Ebereshes. Now Tosfos points out that the problem is in the next perek we're going to talk about that David dug the Shisin, and the Gemara is going to tell us a whole story over there. Here he mentions it briefly. So what's going on over here? If we're saying that Hashem created them by Sheshes Mebereshes, then what is David doing a couple of thousand years later? Because David was preparing for the Bais Mikdash, so that means he has to prepare the Shisin. But the question is, what's David doing if Hashem already did it when the world was created? So Maharal Shah talks about over here that Tosfos says that actually it may be two different lashonis of what Rabbi Yochanan holds, because here we're saying that they were created by Hashem, but later on in the next perek we learn that they were dug by David. On the other hand, Maharal Shah says it doesn't necessarily have to be the Shisin that we talk about in the next perek that David dug, may not be the Shisin that we're talking about over here, where the wine and the water flows down into, but rather the foundations of the Bais Mikdash. And so those are what David dug. Those didn't exist from Sheshes Mebereshes. And therefore, so now you can say the same thing over here then. So they're both called Shisin, but they're two different things. So the Gemara continues, Tanya Rav Yosi Omer, Shisin Cholalin V'Yodin Ad HaTahorim. The Shisin are hollowed out and they go all the way down until the depths. V'Aleihem Bonur Kora David Tezayin Elef Amah. And David went and then dug them out further, another 16,000 amos. So the details of that actually is going to be, so Maharsha explains, according to that, now again, Tosfos discusses that it comes out, therefore, that the whole thing is Bidei Adam, then in that case, it doesn't mean that Hashem created it by Sheshes Mebereshes in the first place, but rather that David dug the whole thing out. On the other hand, again, Maharsha says maybe not necessarily. Rabbi Yossi would agree there was something there from Sheshes Mebereshes, but it didn't necessarily go all the way down to the Tahoim. David continued digging down 16,000 amos until he reached the Tahoim. So in the next perek, when we get to the story, the Gemara is going to tell on Daphne and Gimel, then we're going to get to the details of what David did over there and the whole story that happened when he dug out the Shisin. Anyway, Shenemar. how do we know that? So how do we know about the importance of the Shisin and that Hashem created them in the first place? Shenema, the pasuk says, the Navi Yeshaya says in Hashem's name, Oshira noli didi shiras dodi lekarmai. I'm going to sing on behalf of my beloved. This is the Navi saying, I'm going to sing on behalf of Hashem a song of my beloved about his vineyard. And he starts by describing that as a mashal, the Jewish people are compared to a vineyard. Kerem hoya the didi be Keren ben Shomen. My beloved Hashem had a vineyard in Keren ben Shomen. Keren literally means a corner, and ben Shomen means that's very fat, that's very fertile. So which Eretz Yisrael is the most fertile and then best corner of all the lands in the world. So Hashem has a vineyard, meaning the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael, and he continues. Via Azakehu, he surrounded them with stone walls, which means Rashi says he made for them, they had fortified cities in Eretz Yisrael. By Saklehu, and he removed the stones, which means that Hashem got rid of the Knanim who lived over there in order that the Jewish people should be able to develop to their fullest in a land where they're not going to have Goyim harassing them or trying to convince them to worship Avodah Zarah or do other Averis. Vayita'ehu sodik, and he planted a sodik, which is a very high quality vine. So that refers, Rashi says, to the Bais Mikdash. Rashi on the Pasuk there mentions another point as well. The word sodik is gematria 606. That represents that first we had Sheva Mitzvahs, like the whole rest of the world, and then Hashem added another 606 and gave us total 613. Anyway, Vayivan Migdol B'Sochai, then Hashem built a tower in the middle of that vineyard, and that the Gemara and that represents the Mizbeach. Vegam Yekev Chotzev Boy, and also Hashem carved out a wine press over there. A wine press back then was made. There was a big pit in the ground where you would trample on the grapes, and then you'd press them to make the grape juice, which eventually turns into wine. So the Yekev over here represents then represents the Shisin, which are dug into the ground. So Vayita'ehu Sodek Zavesimekdash, the Sodek, the very high quality vine, and Rashi points out a sodik would be normally like you can plant a vine, for example, by taking a cutting from one vine and then you take a branch from one vine and you replant it someplace else. But the higher quality would be when you take the roots of the vine. So therefore, this represents the Bais Mikdash, which is the root, the main thing of the Jewish people. The tower that he built in the middle of it represents the Mizbeach, which is tall and narrow, like a tower. And he also dug a wine press in there. Elu Shisin, that refers to the Shisin. So we see, in other words, that all of those are essential things that Hashem built for the sake of the Jewish people, including the Shisin. So we see that they existed from Sheshes and Ebereshes.
The Shisin was the one?
The was just the one.
Right,
you had the wine and the water both flowed down into that, presumably. Marsha brings that Tosfos brings a different girsa from Tosefta, that the tower represents the Heichel, the Yekev represents the Mizbeach, and Yalkut Shimoni has a similar girsa. So then Sodek would refer to the Jewish people, where we find other psukim where the Jewish people are compared to a Sodek. The point is, the Navi goes on to say that Hashem is saying, I expected that with all of this, this vineyard would produce the best quality grapes and the best quality wine, and now it's not, and therefore Hashem is saying, I'm disappointed with it, and Nimshol, we understand. Okay. Going back a few blocks now, So the Gemara had been discussing the dinim of the lulav and then taking the lulav and taking the arava. So now the Gemara brings in this connection. Amar Rabba Bohu, Amar Rabba Lazar, kol makayim or hanota lulav ve'egdoi. A person does the mitzvah of lulav bound up with the other minim. Where technically, by the way, in the previous perek, it talked about, in principle, api alocha, you don't have to bind them. You're yotze, even if the minim are not bound. But a person binds them, which shows that he loves the mitzvah and wants to do it in the best possible way. V'hadas ba'avoysoi, and he takes the hadasim with their groups of three. So in other words, even though, for example, So for example, you could have, let's say, in principle, a person can be yotze with hadassim that have only one set of mishaloshin at the top. All the rest of the leaves, in principle, can be not in threes and only on the top, and b'dievid yotze like that. But here, a person doesn't do that. He takes it properly by avoisoi, where the whole thing is avois. The whole thing is 3x3. Mala, all of our kosev, kila bonim izbeach, v'hikruv, all of korban, Hashem counts it on his behalf as though he built the mizbeach and brought a korban on it. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Isru chag ba'avoisim ad kaunis ha-mizbeach. Tie up the chag, the yomtiv, ba'avoisim. So isru would refer to the tying the lulav. Ba'avoisim would refer to the hadassim, which are 3x3 like they should be. Ad kaunis ha-mizbeach. And that counts as if it was all the way to the corners of the mizbeach, as if there was matan domim, as if there was blood being sprinkled on the corners of the mizbeach. And then the Gemara continue. Now you have the question is the Orach HaNer asks the question that usually we don't find the blood of Korbanos is not usually sprinkled on the corners of Mizbeach. The corners, meaning the top, the things that stick out on the top, you usually only find that by Chatas. Most other Korbanos, you have Shtayim Shein Arba down near the bottom on the bottom half of the Mizbeach. You have it's on the corners, but they're not the Kronos, but rather the Zovius, the corners where one wall meets the next one. So why over here does it say Al Kaunis and Mizbeach? Ad Kaunis and Mizbeach. So he says, because we find by the Chanukah Sabayis of the third Beis Hamikdash, Shibonim Behed of Yamenu, that Yechezkel describes that the blood of the special Korbanos Milurim that will be brought then will be applied to the corners of the Mizbeach. So therefore we're saying that this person is not just like he built Stam a Mizbeach, we're talking about like he built the Mizbeach of the third Beis Hamikdash and brought on it the Korbanos Milurim that are going to inaugurate it as the Mizbeach that's going to be used for all time. Then the Gemara continues. Amr Rav Yirmiya Mishum Rav Shimon ben Yochai, Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Shimon Hamakuzi, Mishum Rav Yosi Hamakuzi, or Yochanan Hamakuzi. Here is another thing we can learn from that pasuk. Kola Oisu Isur Lachag Ba'achilo Vashsiya, a person who makes an Isur for the Yomtiv with eating and drinking. So Isur means connection, means binding, just like we said, by binding the lulav. So he binds together the day after, he binds the yomtiv together with eating and drinking. And actually has two explanations. One, that he binds the simcha of the yomtiv itself with eating and drinking. In other words, he doesn't just do, as the Gemara mentions elsewhere, you could conceivably celebrate a yomtiv as kula lavaya, that it's all for Hashem and the whole time is davening and learning, but a person doesn't. He takes the time to enjoy the yomtiv with food and drink. The second explanation Rashi says is it means the day after yomtiv, which is where we get the name Isruchag from Rashi's second explanation here. So when he does that, Mala Olav Kosev Kila Bonim Mizbeach Veikruv Olav Korban. Again, Hashem counts it and credits him as though he built a Mizbeach and brought a Korban on it. Shenema Isruchag Ba'avoyisim Atanis Mizbeach. So here we understand Isruchag. He ties up the yomtiv, either the yomtiv itself or the day after yomtiv. But avoisim, now we understand avoisim means meloshin fat animals. So he eats fat, the good quality meat and other delicacies. Then Hashem counts it ad kaunisim as bad. Now, so Rashi's explanation of Isur again means that he ties the yomtiv itself or the day after yomtiv to with the simcha of yomtiv with the eating and drinking. Marsha says that no, what it means is Isser in the simple sense of making an Isser for himself. He makes sure not to eat too much on Yom Tov. He shouldn't eat Achila Gasa and not to get drunk. So now Hashem credits him that he, on the one hand, he enjoyed the Yom Tov, but he knew not to go overboard. So for that, Hashem counts it Kilum Bonim is Beach the Hikrav Olav Korban. The Orach HaNer makes a point. You have kind of three different levels over here. You have what a person could do bizman shebeis hamikdash kayam, where you can bring an actual korban. Then you have when there's no beis hamikdash, where at least he can do lulav and esrog. And if he can't even afford lulav and esrog, then akaponim he can do this as far as isur l'chag. So therefore, and then the pasuk is saying that all three of those, Hashem gives him the credit for that, each one according to what he could have done. The Gemara goes on. Omer of Chizki, Omer of Yirmiya, Omer of Shimon Yechoi. Kol mitzvahs kulan einanam yotze behen elo derech b'dilosan. All mitzvahs, a person is yotze with them only when he holds them in the way in which they grow. We learned this in Yuma, for example, as far as the krushim of the Mishkan. Actually, that's the pasuk that the Gemara brings over here. The krushim of the Mishkan had to be made. The side that was towards the roots when the tree was alive has to be the bottom end of the krushim now, and the top end. You can't flip them upside down. And the same thing with other mitzvahs, the same thing with the Dalet Minim, they also have to be facing up. The one thing we have, the confusion is as far as the Esrog actually grows on the tree with the pitim hanging downward. However, the Uketz is considered to be the bottom end because it's closer to the roots of the tree. So therefore, so that's why we take the lulav with the pitim upward. If you take it with the pitim downward, then it's upside down, even though that is the direction in which it grows on the tree. So you have in the velt they hold it upside down when they're starting to make the bracha, and then they turn it right side up for the reason that we learned before, because Tosfos points out as soon as you're holding them, you're already yotze the mitzvah, and you have to make the bracha before you do the mitzvah. Our minhag, instead of doing that, is we leave it on the table under in the box or whatever until we're almost finished the bracha, and then we pick it up. So that's what we're saying. Derech Bilasan. That's what I'm saying. So if you look at an esrog tree, if you look at an esrog growing on a tree, you will see that the esrogim are growing with the pitim hanging downward. However, we don't consider that to be Derech Bilasan. Derech Bilasan is the other way around, with the pitim up, because the pitim, first of all, when they start growing, when they're little, then the pitim is up. As they become larger and heavier, then they turn downward. But essentially, the uketz, which is the stem by which it was attached to the tree when it was alive, is the bottom, and the pitim, which is what's left over of the flower that it grew from, is considered the top. Talks over there about the importance of atzishitim, and all that. Yeah. So kolam mitzvahs kolam enam yetzven elav derech kedoshen shenema atze shittim oimdim, as the pasuk says, wood of shittim that is standing. So it doesn't just mean that Rashi on Chumash mentions it means, in other words, you shouldn't think that the walls of the Mishkan should be built like the way you build a wooden ship, where you put one beam and then another one on top of it and so forth, where the beams are lying horizontally. No, here it means they go vertical. But we also learn from that it means that they have to be standing in the way in which they grew to begin with. Tani nami hochi, we learn similarly in a braisa. Atze shittim oimnim, shema amidon derech dilosan, means you have to put them up in the direction in which they grew when they were alive. Dover acha oimnim, another meaning of oimnim, shema amidon es tzipuyan, they keep their gold plating on, meaning, so Rashi explains over here that it means that they would attach the gold plating to it with golden nails. They wouldn't just make, each keresh was 10 amos long, they didn't just make one solid sheet of gold 10 amos long and then wrap it around the keresh, and that way it would stay on. No, they made it out of pieces that were, they made it out of pieces that were held on by nails. Rashi and Yuma, where we learned this also not so long ago, says another point is also that it means that the wood never rotted away, and therefore the gold plating never fell off. Dover acha oimdin, another meaning of oimdin, shema toma ovat sivron avoto sikuyan. You might think that the hope and the future of those kroshim is gone, because once the oil moed was hidden away, once they built the Beis HaMikdash and they hid away the oil moed, it's never going to be needed again. So there's no hope and no future for them. They continue to exist forever. So we look forward to now. They're not necessarily. I mean, the Beis HaMikdash is the Beis HaMikdash is not the third Beis HaMikdash is not necessarily going to need them, but nevertheless, they will still exist and they will be brought out when the Beis HaMikdash is built. Marsha says also we learned over there in Yuma that Marsha point out, you would have thought, how could wooden beams like that survive for thousands of years? Wouldn't they long since have rotted away? Note the word "only" means that they last forever. Okay. There, by the way, after the statement of Rav Shimon ben Yochai, which was in connection with the mitzvah of lulav about derech dilasan, that was when we learned the previous things that Rav Shimon ben Yochai had said before about Ra'isi bnei aliyah v'hin mu'atin and Yochai lifter eskola and kulav anadin. In the Gemara, those are after this. Why the mechaber of Ein Yaakov put it out of order, as we've had many times before, he does that, and I have yet to understand why.
When we say Omar Chizki, Omar Birmiya, Omar Shimon ben Yochai, it's mean the three.
Means Reb Chizki is saying that Reb Yumia had said that Reb Shimon ben Yochai had said. Now Reb Yumia, they're repeating from Reb Shimon ben Yochai. Now Reb Shimon ben Yochai lived a long time before Reb Yumia. Reb Yumia was a Talmud of Reb Yochanan, and this is 150-200 years after Reb Shimon. So it doesn't mean that he heard it directly from him. It means that he had the Kabbalah from his Rebbeim that it goes back to him. So there's more than one Chizkiya or Reb Chizkiya in the Gemara. A lot of times we have Chizkiya in the Gemara without Rebbe. He was a son of Reb Chiya, and he was one of the Rebbe. He was the main Rebbe of Reb Yechon. But then you have this is Rebbe Chizkiya, who was a later Amora, and as we can see over here, is a Talmud of Rebbe Yemiya. Okay. The Mishnah says, "B'chol yom makifnes mizbeach pamachas." Every other day of Sukkot, the first 6 days, they would walk around the mizbeach one time. And we had earlier in the perek there was a machlokas whether they would do it while they're holding the lulavim or whether it's while they're holding the arabas. Anyway, v'omim ona Hashem hoshia na ona Hashem hoshia or atzlicha na. They would say that pasuk. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, instead of ona Hashem hoshia na, Rabbi Yehuda says they would say ani vahu hoshia na ani vahu hoshia or atzlicha na. What is ani vahu? So first of all, Rashi explains there's a few things. The words ani vahu are the same gematria as ona Hashem. So therefore, it can substitute for ona Hashem. Second of all, Rashi says that you have the famous 72 names of Hashem that come from last week's parasha. You have in Parashas Beshalach, right before Kriyas Yamsif, you have three psukim back to back that each have 72 letters. The first one begins Vayisa, the second one goes Vayisa, Malacha, the Kim, Aholach, Lefne, Machne, Yisrael, etc., Vayove, Ben Machne, and Simon, Ben Machne, Yisrael, etc., and Vayet, Moshe, Yodel, Alayom, B'cholo. So each one of them has 72 letters, and then Sifre Kabbalah, it talks about that what you can do is you take the first pasuk and you put it in straight order, you take the second pasuk and put it in backwards order, and the third one again in straight order, and then the result is you put them in a, and you put them one above the other, you end up with three, you end up with 72 three-letter combinations. So for example, the first combination is Vav, He, and Vav. You have the Vav of Vayisa, the He of the last word of the second Pasuk Haloyla, and the Vav that begins the third Pasuk Vayet. And then you have the second one and the third one and so forth, and you go through like that, and you have 72 names of Hashem that are each made of three letters. There's different places, Sefer Raziel HaMalach talks about them. There's different other places in Sifrei Kabbalah where it talks about them. So here now what you have is, of those 72, the first one is Vav Hei Vav. The 37th one, which means, in other words, the beginning of the second half, is Aleph Nun Aleph. So therefore, you have Aleph Nun Yud, rather. So there you have Anivahu comes from those names of Hashem. So the Aruch HaNer points out, by the way, I mean, so you have the question. And so first of all, so the question becomes then, in that case, then why are we, why are we doing it out of order? So we should put Vahu first and then Ani. After all, that's the order in which they come. So there's another explanation, actually. There's another explanation that Rishonim say, because the word Ani Vahu also represents two psukim that refer to the fact that Hashem is always Imoy Anochi B'Tzara. Ani, you have that... You have a pasuk where Hashem says that I don't remember which pasuk it is, but there's a pasuk that where Hashem says on himself ani that I am imoy anochi b'tzarai. You have, but there's other pasukim. There's a pasuk that has the word ani. I don't remember now which one it is that represents that Hashem is with us in all our tzaris. And then that's what it is. You have a pasuk from Yechezkel va'ani b'sarcha goyla al nahar kavar. Now, in the simple meaning, it means that Yechezkel himself is describing, I was among the Jewish people in Golos by Nahar Kvar, and then I saw the vision. But we also understand that it means Hashem himself is saying, Ani, I myself am among the Golah, because we know that the Shekhinah goes with the Jewish people wherever we go. And then the Vahu is, you have a Pasuk from Yirmiyah, Vahu Osir Bozikin. Again, in context, the Pasuk is talking about Yirmiyah himself, that he was in chains, that he was going in when the Psukim described over there, Nebuchadnezzar had told Nebuzaradan and his general to, he knew that Yirmiyah all these years had been giving Nebuah, do tshuva, the Mishmikah shouldn't be destroyed, listen to Nebuchadnezzar, don't rebel against him. And so Nebuchadnezzar had a lot of derech eretz for Yirmiyah, so he tells Nebuzaradan, make sure to treat him nicely. Meanwhile, Yirmiyah is not going to stand for that. He doesn't want to have special treatment. So when he sees groups of Jews who are in chains over there, Vohu also Bozikim, he went and put himself among the chains as well. Nebuzaradan has to keep on schlepping him out of that, kind of. But again, the Vohu also Bozikim in a deeper level means not just the Navi Yirmiyah, means Hashem himself is, so to speak, bound up in chains with the Jewish people. So therefore, Ani Vohu also represents that Hashem is saying, I, in both of those psukim, I'm representing myself at Imoy Anochi B'Tzara. So that's another reason why we say that. By the way, there are sidurim. You can find many sidurim, in particular Nusach Ashkenaz, where they have the Nusach Aniva Hoy with a cholam on the second vav. And the Rabbi Yaakov Emden, for example, explains that that's how it should be. But the Alter Rebbe in his sidur specifically says it should be vahu with a shuruk. And the reason is because so it should also represent that idea of ani vahu, that Hashem is with us in our tzaris.
Okay. also Anivu, it's a two level of Gilui Hashem.
So it's two level, right. But the question is asked, though, why we have it in that order. Why Ani and then Vahu rather than the other way around? One thing is, the Aruch HaNer points out, when you look at it, if you look at those 72 combinations that Rashi is referring to, you find not only the first one is Vav Hei Vav, also the 49th one is. So therefore, they actually do go in order, 37th and 49th, Ani being the 37th, Vahu being the 49th. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda is saying that they would say that instead of Onah Hashem Oshiyano. Now, why Taka are they doing that? Marsha explains, because usually, fine, of course, the rest of the time we say Hallel, we say Onah Hashem Oshiyano. But now, specifically on Sukkos, when we're doing Hakafos around the Mizbeach, and nowadays when we do around the Bima, and we want to ask that Hashem should, the same way, should be Makif, that Hashem should surround us and protect us, then, and we're reenacting with that what they did by Yericho before the walls fell. So therefore, specifically, we want to invoke these names of Hashem, Ani Vahu, to represent Imo Yonoichi B'tzara. And Marsha goes on to say, that's also why would they surround the Bismikdash, the Mizbeach, Davka with Arovas? Because Arovas represent the Rishoyim. So therefore, so we're asking Hashem to protect us and get rid of the Rishoyim, as in fact we see that on Hashanah Rabbah, we take the Arovas and we beat them on the ground to represent what should happen to the Rishoyim. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. On that day, on Hashanah Rabbah, they would surround the Mizbeach seven times. Just like now, on Hashanah Rabbah, we go around the Bima seven times. B'shas p'tiros and mahen oimrim, what would they say when they're leaving, when they're taking leave of the Mizbeach? It may mean every day, it may mean dafka after Hashanah Rabbah. Anyway, they would say, yoifi loch Mizbeach, yoifi loch Mizbeach. Beauty for you, Mizbeach, beauty for you, Mizbeach. Meaning Rashi says, they're saying, we're doing all this beauty for you, the Mizbeach, because you bring kapara for us. So therefore, we're like honoring you with all of this covered by going around you and putting the Arabis around you and so forth. Marsha refers to, we have at the end of the Masechta, the famous story with Miriam Bas Bilga, which we'll talk about in detail when we get to it, Bez Hashem. But anyway, so there, Krakev, she kicked the Mizbeach and called it names. So now we're saying we're just the opposite. Yofi Loch Mizbeach, we know that the Mizbeach has beauty and glory. Rabbi Lezib and Yaakov Omer, Lekav Loch Mizbeach, Lekav Loch Mizbeach. Rabbi Lezib and Yaakov says, the Loshen they would say is, to Hashem and for you, Mizbeach, to Hashem and for you, Mizbeach, is whom we're doing this covered for. And Marsha adds, in other words, the point is, Miriam Bas Bilga was koifer and said, claiming that the Bais HaMikdash and Hashem don't stand up for the Jewish people in their trouble. Now we're saying, Fakir, we recognize that, no, Hashem does stand for us, and the Mizbeach does help us out with the Kovanis. But the Gemara asks, "Welcome, shtat of Shem Shemayim b'davar achad." Isn't there a problem with this expression, "Lekav loch mizbeach"? It comes out they're putting Hashem's name together with something else. V'tanya, and we learn in a brisa, "Omer of Shem Ben Yochai, kolam shtat of Shem, kolam shtat of really Shem Shemayim b'davar achad, nekam in a olam." Anybody who combines together Hashem's name with something else, because even as great as a mizbeach is, it's a nivra. You don't combine a nivra together with the Eibishter. So anybody who does, nekam in a olam, is going to be uprooted from the world. Shenema, as the pasuk says, we have it in next week's parasha, bilti l'Hashem levadoi. Only to Hashem alone. The pasuk is talking about bringing korbanos, zeveach le'kim yochram, but it means you're not allowed to combine Hashem together with anything else. So how can they say l'kav v'loch mizbeach? And the answer is hochi ka'amri l'kav anu modim v'loch anu mekalsim. They're not putting them together. They're saying Hashem, we're thanking for giving us these mitzvahs and for making us Jews and so on and so forth. And to you, mizbeach, we're praising that you're the vehicle through which Hashem brings us kapara. We thank Hashem and we're praising and we're talking about the greatness of you, the Mizbeach, that you're so precious to us that through you comes the Kapara for us. Tosfos elsewhere points out, by the way, you have Psukim where it does seem they have Hashem together with something else. For example, when Gideon and his army are attacking Midian, they use the expression and they yell out Cherev LaHashem ul Gideon. So how is that not Meshach of Shem Shemayim B'davar Acher? So Tosfos explains, because the problem is only when you're saying it in a way that makes it sound like worship. When they're saying Cherev LaHashem Ul Gideon, nobody's saying that it doesn't even sound, there's not even a habam in it to think that anybody's saying we're worshiping Gideon. They're saying Hashem, through Gideon, is fighting on our behalf. The Hashem is fighting on our behalf, and Gidon is his messenger to do it. So that's not Meshach of Shem Shemayim, but Davar Acher. Where is over here on the face of it when they're saying Lekav Alach Mizbeach? It sounds like it means that we're worshiping or we're praising both Hashem and the Mizbeach, and that's wrong. And therefore, the Gemara says that's not what it means. We're saying separately to Hashem and separately to the Mizbeach. There is, by the way, another point in this. So that's what we're saying, because we're saying two different things. When they say "lekav loch mizbeach," they mean to Hashem and then separately to the mizbeach. So that's allowed. There are, by the way, Rishonim who learn that primarily the problem of Meshat of Shem Shemayim Medavacha is really more primarily when a person swears. You have, for example, let's say there's a big question about if you have a goyish business partner or whatever, and he has to swear in court, and he might swear in the name, let's say, you know, he's going to swear in the name of Hashem plus whatever his guy over there. Is that a problem that you're causing him to do that? So the Gemara discusses elsewhere that shittuf is mutter for goyim, whether that means shittuf as far as worship, whether it means shittuf only as far as swearing. So for them, it's mutter, it's not such a big problem. But if a yid were to swear, for example, by Hashem and something else, that would be a problem. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here, nekam and olam. In Chassidus, it talks about the idea when it comes to worship, there's less of an issue of goyim doing shittuf. Thus, for example, there's less of a problem with the Christians worshiping Hashem plus their guy, because after all, they get their hashpah not directly from Hashem anyway. They anyway get it through their sarim. So there's anyway a certain degree of shittuf as it is over there. Whereas by us, where we get directly from the Eibishter, then for us, shittuf is off the table completely.
The Yiddish court, they don't make a yid swear.
They affirm a lot of times, so that helps also, right? Yeah. Okay. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola. It's today. Yud Ches, yeah, thank you. Okay. It's very clear that Ebba says that our generation is the last generation of Gola from the first generation of Gola, because we know the Friedrich Rebbe already announced back in his time, La'alta L'Truva, La'alta L'Gola, as he was announcing throughout Tavshin Aleph and Tavshin Beis and so forth, and Imdu Hochen Kochem, everybody has to stand ready for Mashiach Tzidkenu, and how much more so now that it's decades after that, then for sure it must be that it's time for the Gola. Okay, we begin a new set of halachas and a new simen in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, the halachas of Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and the Chiyuvim of it. Now, so you have, in principle, on Shabbos, you're allowed to add aliyahs, although, as we know, that we have the minhag not to do that. When you do that, then in principle, you're allowed to even call a kohen or a levi for achron, because you already have the seven. The same way, that's not so negeah to us, since we don't do hesafis. However, it is relevant to know, as we know, that the mafdu can be a kohen or a levi. Even if you add aliyahs, you can even have the achron can be a kohen, and the mafdu can also be a kohen or whatever, because you have the kaddish in between them. Simchas Torah, when we have three Sipur Torah come out, then you can have a Koyan can be Chosin Torah, and another one be Chosin Bereshis, and another one be Mafter, because each one is in a separate Sipur Torah. On the other hand, though, other times when you take out three Sipur Torah, then you can't do that, because the fact is, on other times when you take out three Sipur Torah, you haven't actually finished the Kriya, you haven't actually finished the number of Aliyahs in the first Sipur Torah. So, in other words, there's a chiyuv of kriya for that day. You have a parasha to read, parashas Miketz, for example, during Hanukkah, and similarly the other times, and you haven't yet finished because you don't have you still have to read the parts of Rosh Chodesh and the part of Hanukkah. Only the part of Hanukkah is the maftu; the other parts are not, and therefore, so you could call again. You could call one for Rosh Chodesh and one for Hanukkah, let's say, but you can't have all three. You can't have the last aliyah in the parasha of the week be a koyan, even if they add extra aliyahs and so on and so forth. Similarly, parashas Shkolim and parashas Chodesh.